Golden Knights.
Let me alarm it.
Not yet.
Okay.
They might be on the phone.
Okay.
We'll call to order and I'll do roll call.
Good afternoon. My name is Mason Van Helling, and I'd like to call the Southern Nevada Health District Facility Advisory Board meeting to order. We'll go ahead and, do we want to do a roll call? We're going to go ahead and do a roll call to ensure that we have a quorum. If not, we'll proceed to informational items on the agenda. So, Edie, okay. If you wouldn't mind taking roll, please.
Thank you. So this is the official roll call. Do I have Boulder City Hospital on the line? Is there anyone from Dignity Health? I have Jeremy Bradshaw and Adam Rudd's representative for HCA. Is there anyone else from HCA on the line?
Yes, this is Todd Sklamberg, and I'll also be present here in about 10 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Do we have Mesa View Hospital? Michael Callahan, Federal Hospital. I have Charlene Arnett. Do we have North Vista Hospital?
Yes, this is Vince Marielli.
Thank you. Do we have Ross McNeil or Southern Nevada Adult Mental Health? And with UHS Valley Health, I have Robert Freymuller, Saj Pulicard is on the line, and Ryan Jensen. Do I have anyone else from UHS on the line?
Sam Kaufman from Henderson Hospital is here.
Thank you. I have UNC, and then do I have the VA, Peggy Kearns, on the line? And I also have Robert Vickery from West Care. Is that correct?
Affirmative. Thank you.
Thank you. We do not have quorum, so this will be an informational-only meeting.
Just for a point of clarification, doesn't the representative from the larger health systems count as far as representation, or is that just towards a vote?
They're one vote, so they represent one person for quorum purposes as well as voting.
Okay.
And so Annette is here. Annette, we do not have quorum, so we informed her that he would like to move forward with an informational meeting only.
That's fine. No motion can be made.
Okay.
Okay. What about approving the agenda? So we're gonna hold on, and if somebody else dials in, we'll move back to those items that need possible action. But really, most of our agenda was informational. So what about public comment?
Yep.
Public. Okay. Still take public comment?
Take public comment.
Yes.
You're not making a motion for public comment.
Great. Item number two is public comment. Those are items devoted to what's on the agenda. Do we have any public comment that would like to speak on items regarding our agenda? Seeing none and hearing none, we'll go ahead and move to item number five. Receive and discuss a report from Maria Azzarelli, did I say that right? Correct. Regarding the electronic referral on tobacco cessation services throughout the electronic health record. And again, this will be for informational purposes, so welcome.
Thank you. And I believe that the presentation that I'm going to provide was disseminated through the email with the announcement for this particular meeting. For those that would like to follow along. Just want to make sure you can hear me appropriately on this mic.
Great. Yes, we can.
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Thank you. So once again, my name is Maria Azzarelli. I've been with the Southern Nevada Health District in the role of Tobacco Control Program Coordinator for 19 years. And just recently, I was promoted to Manager of the Office of Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion, which tobacco is under that purview. But my expertise really is in tobacco control, and that's what I'm going to be talking about today. So So let's get started here. If you look at the page that I have before us in the beginning of this presentation, really this project started with UMC, our partners. They've been a wonderful partner for the past year as it relates to this project. And what the project really entails is establishing electronic referral to existing tobacco cessation services through the electronic health record. And so that's why I have a description here of the partners that are at play here. We have UMC, we have us at the Southern Nevada Health District, but we also have the state. The state is also heavily vested in this, as they've been providing a lot of funding to assure that this happens. Also, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has been providing funding and encouraging us to assure that electronic referral to cessation services occurs. Of course, our community is also a partner here because they will benefit from this if it happens. If and when it happens, I should say. And then also what's very important here, part of my purpose here, is that if you see the first bullet, it says University Medical Center. We hope that other hospitals would come on board as well and implement this in their particular facility. So the slide that we have up here talks about the toll of tobacco in Nevada. The tobacco industry spends $80 million a year to market their products. That's what we know is happening, there's facts and science and economic reports that show this, but there's also a lot of things that happen that we know is happening in our community, but we don't have the numbers to prove it. In our bars, in our nightclubs, there's a lot of tobacco industry marketing that happens every weekend here in the Valley. Smoking is still the leading cause of preventable death. That kills 480,000 people a year in the United States. That is actually more than alcohol, AIDS, motor vehicle crashes, illegal drugs, murders, and suicides combined. And the monetary toll of tobacco use for each smoker's lifetime has been calculated by the Centers for Disease Control at $1.4 million. And then, of course, as hospital executives, you will all know that in Nevada, $1.08 billion are spent in annual health care costs directly caused by smoking, and that's just Nevada alone, the toll of tobacco. On the right-hand side of this slide, you'll see an image, and it's an old-time tobacco advertisement saying that more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarettes. And you might say to yourself, well, okay, that was a long time ago. Everybody knows the truth. Healthcare providers know that that's not true. But I should tell you that healthcare providers, there are so many new tobacco products out there, electronic cigarettes, all sorts of new things, that our healthcare providers can't catch up with that. And so sometimes they're giving misinformation unwillingly. They're not meaning to do this, but they're giving misinformation out to the patients about, for example, that electronic cigarettes could be used as cessation devices when that is not the case. They're not to be marketed as that. They are not cessation devices. They're not sanctioned for that use. So there's some education to be done in that realm, and I'll explain how this project can help address that issue in a few minutes. And this presentation is very short, so I won't take too much of your time. So if we look at this slide, it talks about the other tobacco products. And I have an excerpt here from the Clark County Adult Tobacco Survey that was conducted in 2016. And if you look, there are some populations here in the chart below. For example, Asian, we didn't have enough of a representative sample, so it says zeros. But the point of this chart is really to show that different populations, ethnicities and racial groups, and even age groups, they use different tobacco products at different prevalence rates. So if you look down here where it says menthols, you'll see that African Americans smoke menthols at 50% of those that were surveyed, and that's higher than any than most of the other populations. You see Caucasian is 23%, things like this. Hookah use. Hispanics, 9.5%, while the other populations were at a lower rate. So there's a lot of tobacco products, and I have some of the images here so you can see what they look like. And so these different tobacco products are marketed at different populations differently, thus you have different prevalence rates. And so we've done a lot of work here at the Southern Nevada Health District to address tobacco use. Our adult smoking rate was once the highest in the nation here. We reduced that to 17%. Some diverse community smoking rates have dramatically declined, although in the African American population, the rates still are very high. And high school smoking rates have decreased from 30% in 1999 to 5.9%. So we've done a lot of great work there to try to get that down, and in addition to our community partners. Community partners have worked towards that. So what we are talking about when we talk about electronic referral to the quit line is really the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality talks about creating sustainable linkages between the clinical and community settings to improve the patient's access to preventative and chronic care services by developing partnerships between organizations that have a common goal. That's this slide here. Sorry, I didn't advance. And so the goal of clinical community linkage is to coordinate healthcare delivery between public health, community-based organizations, and other programs to promote healthy behavior. So here's an example of what a clinical community linkage is, and that's the brief tobacco use intervention, where a healthcare provider asks about tobacco use at each patient visit. And when I say healthcare provider, we have a broad definition of healthcare provider. It can be a social service worker, it can be a health educator, it can be a physician, a nurse. It's very broad. And it can even be an influential person in the community, like a pastor, somebody that has influence over other people. So we've trained people all over this county for about 10 years to ask patients or clients or participants about their tobacco use, advise them to quit, and assist them by educating on the dangers of tobacco use and referring them to 1-800-QUIT-NOW, which is the Nevada Tobacco Quit Line. And that is heavily funded by the Centers for Disease Control via the state of Nevada. Now, you all know that healthcare providers are taxed with time. They don't have time to go through and teach their patients how to quit tobacco use. That's why we have this service available, this 1-800-QUIT-NOW. It's a free telephonic service, and I'll talk more about that in a moment. So since 2006, we've trained over 30,000 healthcare providers in the brief tobacco use intervention. We've employed the use and the help of the American Lung Association local chapter to train healthcare providers, in addition to staff in our office doing that as well. In the past, this was good enough for us to talk to healthcare providers and train them how to talk to their patients about tobacco use. The CDC is requiring more of us now, and they're requiring that if their funds are being sent to programs like ours, that we do more. And I'll explain what that more is in just a moment. So, rather than a healthcare provider simply asking, "Do you smoke cigarettes?" when a patient comes in, the question in the electronic health record should be modified to ask, "Do you use tobacco products such as?" and then capture those other tobacco products that we know are being used in our community. People are not just smoking cigarettes. In fact, they may not be smoking traditional cigarettes at all. They may strictly be using electronic vapor products. And we want to know that so that they can get help to quit. So this is an example of how that question would be asked in the electronic health record. And UMC has been kind enough to already modify their electronic health record to capture tobacco use status in this method. And as you can see here, there's a note at the bottom of this particular slide that, you know, as I said, people are using all sorts of tobacco products. We have to capture exactly what they're using, but also immigrants from other nations are coming here, and they're using non-traditional tobacco products that we've never heard of in this country. So we have to try to capture that as well and get them help to quit. So this is the resource, the Nevada Tobacco Quit Line. It's a 1-800 number, free, absolutely free for anyone who calls from any Nevada area code. They will provide services in any language. They have extended hours of operation. They offer a limited supply of free nicotine replacement therapy. And so what we're trying to achieve here is simply, in the past, what we would do is we would train the healthcare providers, say, you know, there's this wonderful service, and we printed these little quit cards that the healthcare provider could give to their patient. CDC doesn't want that anymore. They want the electronic health record modified so that an electronic referral to cessation services occurs. And I'll go into a little bit more about that in just a sec. So this is Clark County Adult Tobacco Survey data from 2016. You'll see here, this is among smokers. This chart is related to smokers. Only 40% of smokers that took this survey were advised to quit by their healthcare provider during their last doctor's visit. Only 40% in Clark County. And throughout the years, we've seen that there's a decrease in the number of individuals who have been advised to quit by their healthcare provider. That could be due to a variety of reasons. Maybe the healthcare provider is just too busy to get to that. There may just be less awareness out there that this is something that should be done, or there's a resource, a free resource that exists for the patients. So by including this in the electronic health record and having a direct referral, that could help avoid these issues. This is Nevada statewide data from the same survey. 50% statewide were advised to quit during the past year. So this is a little drawing here of how the UMC project will work. So as I stated earlier, UMC has already modified their electronic health record to capture comprehensive tobacco use status. So rather than saying, do you smoke cigarettes, they have already modified it to ask, do you use tobacco products? And there's a listing of the tobacco products, and the healthcare provider can check what those are. So if the patient is a tobacco user, the provider asks if they would like to be referred to cessation services. Of course, the patient has to agree to that. Then their information, their name and contact phone number, is extracted electronically from the electronic health record, and a direct message is sent to the Nevada Tobacco Users Quit Line. Then a provider from the Nevada Tobacco Users Quit Line will call that patient. So rather than waiting for the patient to call the quit line, which may never happen, the quit line calls the patient. So that's what CDC really wants us to do here. And also, that what would be wonderful is that these electronic health record systems, if the educational information that is produced by them could be modified with respect to tobacco to actually include the Nevada Tobacco Users Helpline as the go-to cessation resource. Again, it's free. There's been a lot of money put into this over the past two decades. And you know, that should be the go-to system because it is evidence-based. Instead of, I've seen some educational discharge paperwork that comes out of these electronic health records and some of the research that I've done that is really non-evidence-based, and we really need to change that and send people to the free service that is evidence-based.
Maria?
Yes, ma'am.
And any EMR connect to this?
Well, there are some logistical things that need to occur, and I'm not a tech person, but I know that we can put the right people in contact to find out if you already have that capability. Most hospitals, it's my understanding, have the capability to do this. There is a HISP that is required, so to transfer the information securely, but it is my understanding that most people have this, and if they don't, there is a way to get it, and we can actually help with that and facilitate those discussions. And the state of Nevada is so committed to this project that they're, even if there is a cost associated with modification of your electronic health record, they're willing to put in money to help bear those costs. That's how much they want this to happen. That's a great question, and certainly you can follow up with me, and I'm happy to discuss this further and get the answers for you.
Just to follow up to that question, maybe my colleagues could help me. I'm not sure if this is part of meaningful use requirements or Joint Commission. I know Joint Commission requires smoking cessation education, so we may be doing a lot of this already via meaningful use or Joint Commission efforts, and to be able to make it electronically may save everyone resources on both ends.
Yes, it does meet the transition of care meaningful use objective. I've been informed about that, and although I believe that you can meet meaningful use requirements by simply asking, do you smoke cigarettes, what we're trying to do here is get it to the gold standard and the best practice, and if we can do that, we'll be really ahead of much of the nation with this, and I think we will be able to do it because we've already started. So yes, there's definitely, we can meet a lot of things through this project, our mutual needs, so to speak. So this is just simply a slide that talks about what would happen here. And the great thing about this, if we can execute this, is that the Nevada Tobacco Quit Line will provide you information on who's contacted, you know, who they've helped quit, and will provide you regular reports. So we have a nice loop of information, a referral loop. And that is the thing that meets the transition of care meaningful use objective here. So if we can do this, really, what happens is that we have created a sustainable system for referring people to cessation services, and we can hopefully reduce the burden of tobacco use that is so great, as you saw from my initial slides. And I would just ask you to consider this and take this back to your organizations, and if you're interested, you have my contact information in the last slide, or of course you could work through Dr. Johnson and the team here, and they can put you in contact with me, and I can facilitate meetings for, you know, usually for these kinds of things you need somebody to understand the IT part, the electronic health record part, and of course leadership needs to be behind it as well.
Maria, a question. Often we hear where Nevada ranks related to education and healthcare. Where do we rank as far as smokers per capita? Do you have that number?
I don't have the per capita figures, but I do have the prevalence figures. We're about 17% statewide, and that can change depending on what survey tool, but I'm referring to BRFSS, Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey data statewide.
So, what does
that
mean?
We're not the smokiest state, and we don't have the highest prevalence of smokers anymore. And that changes from year to year, but so that's a huge achievement, because as I said, we were considered the smokiest state in the nation in 1999. So I feel like we might be at 13 now, rank 13, but I can get you that information more accurately. We've made great strides.
Yes, yeah. But thank you. Obviously, great information, and please contact Maria in her office if you'd like to learn more. And again, I think there are probably some meaningful use dollars for the facilities that participate in that as well.
Quick question, Maria. I know the evidence-based, and I like it, the NTR is provided and all that, so it sounds like a very solid program. What is the sort of value or connectivity, like I think if you're the AHA, American Heart Association, American Cancer Association, American Lung Association, I know a lot of that tends to be collateral in education versus do patients get referred to that, they network, or their support groups or anything else that...
Well, those organizations that you mentioned, of course, they all do have their cessation services they provide, but this particular cessation service is specific to the state of Nevada. So they understand, for example, that in Nevada we have different schedules, you know, work schedules, some people work all night and that kind of thing, and so they've been trained to deal with, and then they have hours of operation that are conducive to the Nevada lifestyle. And so, you know, we like to refer to them because they also can provide the nicotine replacement therapy.
They're so focused.
Yeah, they're so focused, and they can work with the physician, the patient's physician, if they have one, to customize and refer to pharmacotherapy as well. And I forgot to mention this, they will mail the nicotine replacement therapy to the patient's home, so that person doesn't even have to go anywhere. They can do the cessation services over the phone at home or online if they choose to, and the product gets delivered to their home. And that's helpful for those people that are not so mobile and have other issues in terms of transportation.
Any other questions from the committee? Well, very informative. It sounds like there's some excellent services out there that can help address this issue in our state. So thank you again for educating us. And again, reach out to Maria if you have other questions.
And thank you to your organization for being so willing to work on this project with
us. Great. Thank you.
Nathan, I believe someone came on the line. Can we check and see?
I think it may have been Todd logging up.
Oh, you hung up? Okay.
Yeah. So,
okay.
So it's net zero. We're still neutral. Yes. Okay, thank you. Moving on is receive an update and discuss a report from Ms. Allison Snetzer regarding healthy vending projects in hospitals. And I know they exist out there somewhere, right? And there's probably some vision related to healthy vending machines in hospitals. So.
Oh, yeah. Hey, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Allison Schnitzer. I am a registered dietitian and health educator here at the health district in the same office as Maria, the Office of Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion. Since I've been working here about 2.5 years, my work has been mostly in improving the food environment and particularly in healthy vending. So I wanted to talk with you today about ways to improve the hospital food environment, particularly healthy vending.
You know, as we as a nation and really globally try to wrap our brains around the obesity epidemic, a lot of attention has turned to the food environment and the role that that plays. And it's become apparent that our food environment is obesogenic. It promotes obesity because food, particularly unhealthy food, is available to us all of the time, even in non-food settings. Inappropriate portion sizes encourage overconsumption. Unhealthy food is aggressively marketed to us throughout our life cycle. And perhaps most importantly, unhealthy food is significantly more accessible and affordable than healthy food is. So when you look at how hospitals sort of fit into the overall food environment, hospitals are unique because they are open and busy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. They see, you know, every single group that exists in the community comes through hospitals. Their mission is to promote health, but we know that food offerings don't always align with that mission. And, you know, when you have that overnight staff or you have family there, you know, visiting people, that cafeteria is closed, vending machines are the only source of food available to them. And we all know what typical vending machines look like. So healthy vending is really just one component of an overall public health campaign to improve the food environment into one that facilitates healthy food choices as a way to reduce obesity and its associated chronic diseases. You know, our obesity rates are just continuing to climb despite, you know, all efforts that have been made to date. And we're now looking at an almost 40% adult obesity rate in this country. When you combine overweight and obese, we're at 70% of the country. Here in Nevada, we are doing better than the national average, but we are still seeing that same steady climb, with no abatement. You can just see, you know, how the maps change from, you know, the early 1990s to 2016. The whole country is being affected by it, where obesity rates are just steadily climbing. And you can see in the chart, the NHANES data, you know, where we're projected to be not that long of a time. And I think we all know that that's a real possibility that we'll be at that obesity rate if we don't do something. What are the healthcare costs associated with that obesity rate? We're looking at upwards of $210 billion a year in healthcare for obesity-related diseases. And then just the cost to our workforce in job absenteeism and presenteeism. The costs of obesity are skyrocketing, and where you look at the costs of prevention, they're minuscule compared to the costs of obesity. One thing that I found when I was doing this that I thought was interesting was that ER costs for patients presenting with chest pain are 22 to 41% higher for overweight and obese patients, just because of the cascade of events that can happen when you bring an obese patient into an ER. So, you know, those are real quantifiable ways to look at how the obesity crisis is affecting our bottom line. Hospitals around the country are really starting to understand their role in creating, being a model for being healthy food environments. Through Partnership for Healthy America, 150 hospitals signed on to increase their healthy beverages and decrease their sugar-sweetened beverages. New York City has a healthy hospital food initiative. 21 hospitals have implemented healthy vending standards. Numerous hospitals around the country have just completely removed sugar-sweetened beverages from their hospitals. And then, you know, our neighbors here out in the West, Utah, Intermountain Healthcare, 26 hospitals, 300 vending machines, they have a 100% healthy vending policy. So they have nothing that doesn't meet nutrition standards in any of their vending machines. And they don't have it in their cafeterias either. They have just completely transformed all of their food service. Colorado has a healthy hospital compact. 28 hospitals have signed on, about 150 machines, and they have have various guidelines that they're meeting for nutrition and also for marketing for food, so that you're not promoting the unhealthy foods, you're only promoting the foods that meet the nutrition standards. Banner Health in Arizona, 28 hospitals, it's about 280 machines, they have an 80% policy, so 80% of the products in the machines have to meet the standards, 20% do not. And then Kaiser Permanente in California has a similar one, and I like the quote from their CEO, which, you know, recognizes that as a healthcare organization, they have the obligation to provide the healthiest food possible, and the healthcare organizations really need to lead the way here in this food environment fight. Our office has done quite a bit of work in healthy vending. Since 2011, we started with ourselves. We started with the healthy vending policy here. I don't know if you've ever noticed the vending machines in the lobby up here, but we have an 80% healthy vending policy. We worked to wrap the machines so that they could be very visible as healthy machines. There's stickering in there. There's promotion. All kinds of different marketing to try to make a successful campaign. In 2014, we worked with the Clark County Parks and Recreation to do, they have 100% healthy vending policy for all their recreation centers and aquatic centers. And then in 2015, we brought in and we did a community nutrition assessment for 20 community locations, including 12 hospitals here in Southern Nevada. And that included a survey about what the hospital was currently doing towards healthy food service, including healthy vending, what their interest was in going forward. We work closely with dietary staff and nutrition staff. And through that, we were able to go into a few hospitals that agreed and do full nutrition assessments of their vending machines, provide them trainings on healthy vending, and things such as that. And then our biggest win to date was we worked with the Business Enterprise Program of Nevada through DETR, which is the organization that controls the vending contracts for all federal, state, and local government buildings in all of Nevada, so it's 900 vending machines statewide. We worked with them to adopt a voluntary policy within their own organization, a healthy vending policy. So those machines on the bottom are actually in the ER at UMC. And we developed that branding campaign, that logo, that look, just for this initiative, and we were able to wrap about 20 vending machines down here in Southern Nevada in high-profile locations like Clark County Government Center, City of Las Vegas, City Hall, locations like that, high-profile, high-traffic locations. When we talk about like healthy hospital environments, making big scale changes is hard. I recognize that. The thing with healthy vending is that it's relatively easy because you don't need new equipment, you don't need new recipes, you simply just need to work with your vending provider and say, we're the client, we want healthy vending. And it really does, it can seem like a small thing, but what it does is it's this profound thing of changing a social norm, because right now we see a vending machine and we think soda, we think chips, we don't think that we can get anything healthy in there, so we don't even try to get something healthy in there. Now, when you look at a traditional vending machine product, like those buns, and you compare it to a granola bar, the difference in total calories, saturated fat, sugar, sodium, when you compare, a soda to a low-calorie, beverage, those differences are quite significant, especially in the diets of those who use vending machines. Snacking is only rising in our diet, so we can't afford to have locations where people are regularly getting food that just don't have any healthy options. The typical snack machine is about 10% healthy. You're talking 3 or 4 options within a machine that has 30 to 40 options. Beverage machines do a little bit better, but that's because of the bottled water. The rest of the slots are really sugar-sweetened beverages, sodas, energy drinks. That's what you really see. So it can be quite significant change, one that's easy to implement as opposed to changing out recipes in the cafeteria or anything like that.
you know, because of the work that we've been able to do as an office, you know, we built the experience and the expertise to be able to provide technical assistance. You know, we can go in and do complete nutrition analysis of the vending machine products at a hospital. You know, we can help, you know, a hospital or any other organization determine what percentage of products they would want for a healthy vending initiative, which guidelines they would want to use. There are many different healthy vending guidelines. There's ones from the government, there's ones from American Heart Associations, there's ones from industry. You know, they all have many things in common, but there are ones that are, you know, going to be particularly right for an organization versus other ones. And then, you know, most importantly, we've built relationships with the vending machine companies here in Southern Nevada. We know what the business is like. We know what their healthy vending capabilities are. We know what their healthy vending pick lists look like. You know, we know what they can do, because a lot of times you know, someone will just try to talk to their vending machine company and say, oh, I want some healthier products, and they'll get a little pushback and a little fight, and they'll kind of just drop it. But we know what they're capable of, and especially with the statewide policy that we were able to work on, they know that this is something that they're going to have to do as an industry, really. So, you know, having those relationships and that experience, you know, sets us apart.
Allison?
Yes.
Is there a price difference to the organization, unhealthy versus healthy?
In terms of, like, what the profit would be for
us to provide healthy snacks in there, and, you know, I mean, is the cost going to go up on your vending machine? Because we've got employees and families and stuff buying out of it if you put in healthier products.
Right. So one of the stipulations that we've put in our policies, particularly our statewide policy, is that bottled water has to be 25 cents less than a sugar-sweetened beverage of the same size. Because pricing considerations are very important. We've also worked with one of the vending machine companies here to increase the price of what I like to call their traditional items, because I don't like to say unhealthy, so I call them their traditional items. So we increased the cost of some of the traditional ones to offset the cost of some of the healthier ones, because you know, they will tell you these healthier ones cost more, but they really don't. It's because they buy them in such small quantities. And then they say that, you know, they don't sell, and so then they will charge more. But you're very right. You can't put something in at $3 and expect someone to buy it when there's a candy bar for $1. So we're very aware of that, and we work with the vending machine companies to not make that disparity.
You've had some great success with cart carrying. What about the school district and starting when the kids are young to build that behavior early on, so they kind of know what an alternative is or something like that? It sounds like we got to jump in early.
Yeah, no, and the other healthy vending is one of the things we do. The other thing that I really work on here is school wellness. So I was just at an elementary school today filming. They have a salad bar today at their elementary school, and they do a whole wellness day and everything like that. Clark County School District does have a wellness policy that was essentially enacted in 2015. It's something that our office and many other organizations, American Heart, really trying to help implement, raise awareness of. Some schools are doing it great, like the school that I went to today. Some schools are not doing it very well at all. So you'll see a huge disparity within the school district of schools that are really following the wellness policy by the letter, including vending, and other schools that are not doing such a great job of it. So it's something that our office is working on, and other organizations are working on as well.
All right, any questions, any further questions for Allison? Great information. I know just hearing from your point of in the evening hours, in the normal cafeteria hours are not available, and having those options and for patients and families and students. And so would you mind sharing your actual policy that the health department has with the committee? Can you send it out so we can actually see? And
sure, I would, the statewide one, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
And I would just encourage everyone to just reach out to their food nutrition department, because you do have a say in what's provided, whether it's, you know, it's Morrison's or Sodexo, whoever your vending company is.
And I will say that though, you know, with Sodexo and Morrison,
they don't, at least down here, they don't have the vending. Vending is not part of there. So I have had contact with pretty much the dietary department in every hospital here, and they don't tend to control vending. It's like a offshoot of somewhere.
Do you include a list of vendors that have, you know, accommodated and facilitated this happening, you know, where it has happened, that they've already got the products, know the drill?
Absolutely, absolutely. There is one vending machine company that has most of the hospitals in Southern Nevada, and they have a large capacity for healthy vending. So I can share with you the information on that for sure.
We pulled out, we had Coke machines on all of our floors, fountain machines, and started pulling them about 2 weeks ago in response to addressing obesity and just having excess of sugar beverages floating around. So went to the smaller cans is at least a step to reduce and help control obesity.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think obviously we do hear from our staff and people wanting options. So again, this doesn't cost much to do, but goes a long way for many reasons and good causes. So great job. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, moving on to agenda. Yes.
We had someone come on the line.
Just confirming on the phone, did anybody else log in since we've taken roll at the beginning of the meeting? Would anybody else sign in?
Yes, this is Wanda Nixon out in Mineral County. Sorry, I was at another training.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm sorry, you said Alana Nixon?
Wanda Nixon, W-A-N-D-A, Nixon, N-I-X-O-N.
And Wanda, who are you representing?
I'm the county health officer for Mineral County.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for joining in. Moving to agenda item number 6, a received report from the Chief Health Officer, Dr. Michael Johnson.
I just wanted to give a brief update on our influenza death numbers. You may have seen some of the coverage yesterday. If you hadn't, just wanted to briefly share them here. Due to the severity of the flu this season, we've had our epidemiology and disease surveillance staff work with the Department of Public and Behavioral Health of the state, as well as our Office of Vital Records here, to review and update confirmed cases that we had for influenza. And as a result of that review, we haven't seen an increase in the number of confirmed cases, but we have seen an increase in the number of flu-related deaths. And so this review is very important for that, because oftentimes an outcome can change, as it has in this case, for an individual who may be initially diagnosed with, say, influenza A, H3N2, which is the predominant strain that had been circulating, and may die 3 months later of influenza-related pneumonia. But initially, that individual would be counted as a confirmed case. Later examination, they'd be confirmed as a death, as a flu death. So as a result of this review and update, and if you're not aware, we provide weekly, usually Friday afternoon, our weekly reports. You probably get them for influenza updates, but our death flu deaths have gone from 26 to 48. So the majority of those deaths have been in the 50 to 64-year-old age group, or the 65-plus, which really makes sense, given particularly 65 plus is a risk factor in and of itself, let alone, you know, many individuals may have compromised immune systems and so on. So we've looked at these numbers as the flu season continues to fortunately wind down here in Southern Nevada. We'll continue to this review and provide updates as the flu season kind of wraps up. As you know, it can last year through early May. So,
Dr. Johnson, how does that compare, the number of reported deaths compared to previous years, maybe like 2009, which was a bad season for us,
and obviously population adjusted, you know, we've grown since then as well, but how does that compare to other years?
Good question. This is one of the most severe years we've seen as far as the number of confirmed cases and the number of flu-related deaths. Really, it mirrors a lot of what we saw in 2009. Just for example, compared to last season at this time, we had 13 flu-related deaths. For now, we have 48. We had 571 confirmed cases of influenza last season at this time. We now have 1,292. So, big jumps. So we'll continue to keep you updated. As I mentioned, as the flu season kind of winds down, we're not seeing any additional flu-related deaths. The predominant strain most of the season had been influenza A, H3N2. That kind of peaked in early February. In early March to the present, we've seen influenza B as the predominant strain. So,
and just speaking for the entire committee, but I know the hospitals and healthcare providers have very strict flu vaccination policies for our own employees, so we're not continuing that spread of the flu influenza. So I know that we're all tracking our numbers every season to make sure that we're trying to get 100% compliance in each of our hospitals.
Which is excellent. So that's it.
Okay, very good. All right, moving on to agenda item number 7 is facility advisory reports, and really this is our time to talk about any emerging issues related to this committee or any issues in our Southern Nevada Health District. Does anyone on the phone or in person have any items that they would like to talk about in future meetings or bring up a particular item now at this point? We're open to any suggestions and comments. Hearing none, seeing none, we'll move on to item number 8, public comment. This is the time devoted for the public comment regarding matters that were not on the agenda. Do we have any public comment? Seeing no public comment, I will move for adjournment.
So just to note, we did close the meeting without quorum.
Okay, thank you.
So we will approve the minutes from the January 23rd meeting at the next meeting, which is July 24th.
Very good. And thank you, everyone, for joining on the call. Much appreciated. And thank you for the staff providing these informational reports to the committee. So
thank you.
Great. Thank you. Have a great day, everyone. Bye-bye.